Mr. Stan here at the Genesis Communication Network, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, and of course, they're going to also be the views for the next hour of William Grigg, who was previously the senior editor for the New American Magazine, now graces us with his appearances twice a week here on our programs. We always look forward to what William has to say. Thank you so very much for being with us again.
Dr. Stan, thank you so much for having me.
Well, what are we going to talk about today?
I think we need to talk about martial law.
All right, fine.
And some of the reasons why I think that we've been seeing a process that I described as martial law and the installment plan. Most people assume that martial law is something that would descend upon us in much the same way that perhaps a sudden rainstorm would erupt, that we would simply be standing around minding our business, and then suddenly there would be this cloudburst of tyranny and would find ourselves drenched. And it doesn't necessarily happen that way. I mean, that's the classic coup formulation, where suddenly the military takes over, as in that movie, I believe it was called 7 Days in May.
Right.
It came out about 40-some-odd years ago.
Right. Burt Lance, Kirk Douglas, great movie.
Yeah, great movie. Very scary movie. I mean, it did deal with some things that are very much part of the system we have to talk about. For instance, it alluded to the Mound Weather Facility, which is the continuity of government complex out in Virginia that houses the big computer with the proverbial list on it, the main core index of all these millions of Americans who are considered to be disloyal or suspect or otherwise troublesome. And when I was in Guatemala in 1983, I happened to be there when the government was overthrown in a military coup. It happened very quickly. I remember going into Guatemala City in the company of a friend of mine from Guatemala, and I looked around and I noticed that there were a lot of troops on the streets, and I turned to my native Guatemalan friend and said, "Is today a patriotic holiday of some sort?" And he said, "Not that I'm aware of." And I said, "Well, what's with all the soldiers on the streets? It just seemed a little bit weird." And he said, "I don't know. That is a little bit worrisome." And, of course, it was worrisome because an hour and a half or two later, the presidential palace was stormed and Efrain Rios Montt was jerked out of power. Actually, he'd left. He'd been spirited out of the country by the CIA a few hours earlier than this. But there were dead bodies that started to appear on the streets, and those of us who were non-citizens of Guatemala were recommended, it was recommended to us that we go back to our apartments or our dwellings and simply lock the doors and listen to the radio, which is what I did for the next couple of days. And while I heard helicopter gunships and explosions in the distance, so that kind of thing can happen, but it's not likely to happen in a country of our size. What I think is going on is that we're seeing sort of an incremental process where the tenets and practices and institutions of martial law are being introduced and institutionalized in our country. And this has been going on for a number of decades. As a matter of fact, you could say that it's been going on for over a century. And if you go back 230 years ago to the ratifying debates, particularly in the state of Virginia, where the men who crafted our Constitution were talking about some of the possible weaknesses in that document. It's a brilliant document, but like everything else of human manufacture, it does have weaknesses. There were some very perceptive and prescient criticisms that were offered by, among others, George Mason and Patrick Henry, who were leaders of the Anti-Federalist faction. They were skeptics of the new Constitution because they were convinced that we couldn't have a federal government, that is to say, a confederated republic, where the states would retain most of the power and you'd have a limited central government that would be an instrument of the states. They were convinced that you really couldn't have that type of a architecture that would exist and sustain itself for very long. And as they looked at some of the provisions in the Constitution that gave power to the Congress, particularly, Mason and others were concerned about the possibility that someday we could succumb to martial law.
I think we're moving in that direction very, very quickly. The Military Commission Act, the John Warner Defense Appropriation Act, and of course some of these executive orders have laid the groundwork. We'll be back in just a moment.
Now you can upgrade your existing gravity filter to remove chemicals such as trimethylenes, atrazine, benzene, chlorine, chloroform, and MTBE to below detectable limits. Black Berkey elements are so powerful, they remove pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and transform water, even raw, stagnant pond water, into delicious, crystal-clear drinking water. Nitrates, nitrites, radon-222, unwanted heavy metals like lead, mercury, and aluminum are no problem. Foul tastes like chlorine and obnoxious sulfur odors are removed without removing the healthful and beneficial minerals that your body needs. Black Berkey elements flow 1.5 to 2 times faster than ordinary gravity elements, which means it takes much less time to filter your water. Supercharge your gravity filter today. Upgrade to Black Berkey purification elements.
Get a 2-pack, only $99, or a 4-pack, only $188. Call New Millennium, 888-803-4438. That's 888-803-4438, or order on the web at berkeywater.com.
This is George Whitehurst Berry of the Genesis Communications Network. Have you ever wanted the truth about the economy? Crash, Are You Ready? Is the fastest growing program on GCN. Our one-hour program airs weekdays, Monday through Friday, from 10 to 11 a.m. Central Time, just after the Power Hour and just before Alex Jones. To listen to rebroadcast 24 and 7, visit our website at www.hearitonline.com and click on the appropriate link. Our unparalleled guest lineup has included patriots such as Congressman Ron Paul, Scott Ritter, former UN Chief Weapons Inspector Murray Neal, inventor of the revolutionary dragonskin body armor, and Philip Torme, USS Liberty survivor. We also focus on alternative health and survival topics. Go to www.hearitonline.com. That's HEARITONLINE.com.
It's a fact. Since the creation of the Federal Reserve in 1913, all banks in these United States create money out of thin air for every single loan they issue. With never-ending late fees, over-the-limit fees, and higher interest rates, it has become mathematically impossible to repay all debt, making all of us slaves to our creditors. The Federal Debt Relief System has created a successful, attorney-backed program to legally eliminate credit card debt, personal loans, lines of credit, and other unsecured debts which have been fraudulently created by the banks. We can terminate your unsecured debt within 18 months with a much lower monthly payment, ending with nothing on your credit report. Join the thousands of Americans who now breathe with a sigh of relief because they have legally eliminated their debt. Instead of living each day in fear and frustration, it's time to take action and turn your life around. Call the Federal Debt Relief System at 877-943-8600. That's 877-943-8600. Or visit FDRS.org. Find out how you can break the cycle of debt slavery. Visit FDRS.org today.
Well, Dr. Stan, back here at the Genesis Communication Network, our guest is William Grieg, and we're talking about the imposition of martial law, just a little bit at a time, as a little bit by little bit, in the name of fighting terrorism, of course, and, you know, of keeping the wicked Osama bin Laden from taking away our freedom, while our own government is taking away our freedom and laying the foundation for a ruthless tyranny. What was the land of the free and the home of the brave. So you pick up the story, William.
Yeah, that story actually, as I was pointing out, began way back in the 1788 ratifying conventions, which were called to examine the Constitution. Once again, the Constitution is a marvelous document, the likes of which have never been seen before or since in human politics, but because it's of human manufacture, there are defects to it that have to be taken into account, and one of the defects that some of the anti-federalist people, George Mason and Patrick Henry in particular, saw in the Constitution was the power that Congress was given to call out the militia to deal with insurrections or invasions. And the problem with that war-making power is that there was no check and balance on the part of the states to veto the congressional summons of the militia in the event that the militia was being misused. And what George Mason, who was probably the most individualistic of the people at the convention of 1788, had to say by way of criticism here is that it's obvious that this is a provision which is wildly susceptible to abuse. You can find a situation where Congress could either not appropriate adequate funds to equip and train the militia, which is also part of the Article 1, Section 8 delegation of power to Congress having to do with the militia, or they could use the militia in ways that would be inimical to the liberty of people in various states. He specifically mentioned the possibility that, for instance, you'd have trouble in New Hampshire and militia would be summoned from Georgia in order to put down some kind of a problem in New Hampshire. That seems to be a foreshadowing of this John Warner Defense Act that was talked about and enacted in October 2006. You just made reference to it before we went to the break, Dr. Stan, where the president would have the ability to deploy the National Guard inside the United States as he saw fit, and the governors would have no role in that decision. It's something that seemed to have been anticipated by George Mason. But what George Mason said by way of warning about the long-term consequences of this investment of power in the Congress is that eventually the militia itself could either get worn out through misuse or destroyed through attrition if it's being used too often and too promiscuously, or it could become very notorious in the minds of the public to where it would cultivate a desire on the public for a standing army. And a standing army, from the perspective of the Founding Fathers, was martial law, because they had no concept of a foreign policy in which we would find ourselves consistently creating these expeditionary forces to go across oceans to get involved in the affairs of other countries or to export our system of government and economics at the point of a bayonet. They intended that we would create a commercial republic, that we would have a navy that would protect our interests as a commercial republic, and where power projection was necessary in order to protect Americans, that would be the job of the navy. They didn't envision this huge, overweening military establishment that would be creating expeditionary forces for the purpose of fighting foreign wars. And so obviously, if you have a standing army, what would be the purpose of a standing army? Well, the purpose of a standing army, historically, has been to regiment the lives of the subjects of a given government, whether you're talking about what happened in England, or what happened in Rome, or what happened in other imperial powers throughout history. Our founding fathers are very well aware of that dismal history of standing armies being used as forces of occupation within the boundaries of a given government. And so George Mason, becoming rather conspiratorial in his outlook, suggested that one of the things that could happen would be that ambitious and scheming men in the general or federal government would overuse the militias, deplete them, wear them down through attrition, make them notorious in the eyes of the public by assigning them to do things that would make them disreputable, and thereby cultivate a desire on the part of the public for a standing army. And the standing army, of course, in this instance, would be an army of occupation. Alexander Hamilton, ironically enough, was one of the more centralist-oriented of the founders. In, I believe it was the 8th Federalist paper, talked about the fact that when you have crises of various sorts, he didn't list terrorism, but he might as well have mentioned it, you cultivate in the mind of the public receptiveness to military institutions that are inimical to civil rights, as he put it, meaning those rights having to do with the maintenance of a political system, voting rights, individual rights, due process, things of that sort. So these considerations were part of the conversation that was going on way back in 1788. And Patrick Henry, who's, of course, very well known and very well renowned and respected by people familiar with our founding generation, pointed out that this congressional power to call out the militia was what he considered to be a potentially fatal flaw in the Constitution. I'm quoting now from Patrick Henry. In this essential part of the Constitution, if you are safe, it is not because of the Constitution, but because of the virtues of the men in government. If gentlemen are willing to trust themselves and their posterity to so slender and improbable a chance, they have greater strength of nerves than I have. So, in other words, all that you had to rely on here was the virtue and good faith of people exercising power in government, that this power wouldn't have been abused. And what George Mason said by way of a useful check on congressional power here would have been a recognition, explicit recognition in the Constitution. He wanted to modify the Constitution to ensure that the states had the explicit right to veto the deployment of their militias in ways that the states considered to be ill-advised. There was a functional veto, actually, in the War of 1812, as that war was heading toward its conclusion. there was a point where militia units didn't want to go into Canada because they believed that the invasion of Canada was not part of a strategy necessary to protect the United States from British aggression, but rather was part of a territorial land grab that was being plotted by certain war hawks in the Madison administration. And so militia units who signed up willingly to defend the United States from the Redcoats didn't really want to go into Canada and grab part of Canada for the benefit of Washington. And it got to the point where there was a conscription bill that was being introduced in the Congress that was being promoted by the Madison administration and its allies. And it was bottled up and angrily beaten back by, among other people, Daniel Webster. Daniel Webster went on to become one of the most ardent proponents of a unitary national government, or as he called it, the Union, during the build-up to the war between the states. But in the War of 1812, he was speaking the language of states' rights and the reserved powers to defend individual liberty. And he did so very ardently. That, as a matter of fact, that controversy over conscription almost led to a secession on the part of a group of states that met at the Hartford Convention in Hartford, Connecticut, and they drew up a list of grievances that they had with respect to trade policy and with respect to other economic policies they thought were at the root of the war and the aggressive interests of these war hawks in grabbing part of Canada. But one of the specific grievances mentioned in the Hartford resolves was this proposal to have conscription, which they considered to be completely foreign to the principles of individual liberty. Thomas Jefferson, way back in the War for Independence, referred to military drafts as the last of all oppressions. And so this all came to a head in the War of 1812, but it was left unresolved. The conscription bill didn't pass. We saw the United States and Great Britain achieve peace before the issue of conscription would have become really poignant. It wasn't until a century later that you really saw these moves that were anticipated by Mason and Patrick Henry and others coalesce into some really dangerous developments, the first of which was the effective abolition of the militias. In 1903, with the passage of the Dick Act, that was passed as a way of creating what is now called the National Guard. The original vision that that George Mason and people of that ilk believed in during the time of our founding was that the militia was the entire body of the citizenry under arms, and if you chose to be part of the defense of your community, then you would elect your own leaders, and then you would drill, and you would have access to your own weapons for the military drills that would be used to keep the militias well-regulated. A well-regulated militia was one that was in good fighting form, and that when they were called into the defense of the United States by Congress, Congress would arm and equip and regulate the militias, but Congress wouldn't control the militias outright. But the National Guard essentially destroyed what remained of this people's militia and created a National Guard. Now, that's a really interesting use of expression, of that terminology, because we're not supposed to have a national system. We're supposed to have a federated system or a confederated system, a federal republic of states in Congress assembled rather than a national government. So when they created a National Guard in 1903, it just stands to reason that it was something that represented a nation state, a unitary nation state. And the reason why this happened was because in the war with Spain in 1898, which was the first unabashedly imperialist war fought by Washington, the militias didn't really take kindly to the instructions and orders and strategies of the people who were running that war. This war was fought for pure, unadorned territorial aggrandizement. It was fought in order to obtain certain territories in the Caribbean and in the Pacific, particularly the Philippines, which was seen as a coaling station for further exploits in the Asian region. And many of the people who signed up to serve in the militias in that war didn't understand that they weren't fighting to avenge the Maine. You know, remember the Maine. The Maine was supposedly sunk by those dastardly Iberian saboteurs when actually it was the result of a boiler accident that ship exploded. But rather they had gotten involved in a war to aggrandize the territory controlled by Washington and to benefit some politically connected corporate interests. So because you have these restive and somewhat refractory militia elements in the war with Spain, the Dick Act was passed in 1903, creating the National Guard, and that pretty much destroyed the local militias and created this unitary entity that we call the National Guard that is the recognizable descendant of the militias, but really doesn't have, in essence, any of any of their attributes.
Well, you hold that thought right there. Our guest is William Grigg. We're going to be back in just a moment after the break, right here at Genesis.
Nuclear reactors provide economical energy, but would you be prepared during an accident? During nuclear disasters, great amounts of radioactive iodine are released into the atmosphere, which are then readily absorbed into the body. Medical Corps potassium iodate gives you virtually complete protection from the most feared consequence of a nuclear accident, radioactive poisoning. Potassium iodate can protect against radioactive poisoning by filling the thyroid with good iodine. This shields the thyroid and prevents it from absorbing the harmful radioactive iodine. Potassium iodate is better than the iodide form because it is not as likely to cause upset stomachs in children, the elderly, the sick, and pets. Order the official potassium iodate for only $24 and save $5 by calling New Millennium at 888-803-4438. Call now and get free shipping. That's 888-803-4438.
Have you ever felt like the United States government knows way too much about your financial affairs? I continue to hear stories about property seizures, frozen bank accounts, confiscation of stocks and bonds. It makes me wonder if the U.S. citizen will ever again have the right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Unfortunately, with the Drug and Money Laundering Act, the IRS Revenue Ruling 6045 of 1984, and the Trading with the Enemy Act and Franklin D. Roosevelt's Executive Order of 1933, some precious metal holdings are subject to government intervention. For this reason, Midas Resources has prepared a report explaining the boundaries of trading precious metals privately. Whether if you have any intention of trading with Midas Resources or not, I have instructed my representatives to give this report out free. Call for your free copy at 1-800-686-2237. When investing, always proceed with caution. Again, call 1-800-686-2237. Exercise your legal right to trade metals privately. 1-800-686-2237.
If you're one of the millions of Americans who has a business, credit card, automobile, medical, or unsecured loan debt of $10,000 or more, and you can't make your monthly payments, why don't you call David Lemure and his debt settlement company at 866-374-3101. That's 866-374-3101, because they'll contact your creditors, they'll negotiate a 30 to 60% reduction of what you owe, and arrange for a convenient payment schedule that'll get you out of debt in 12 to 36 months. Why don't you call today? Because the penalties and interest on your debt is increasing, and call David Lemure at 866-374-3101. That's 866-374-3101, and start getting out of debt today.
Hi, this is Dave from Ready Reserve Foods. I have been waiting patiently for the government and mainstream media to inform you of what is turning out to be the biggest problem facing the world in the last 50 years. For the last 3 years, the Earth has consumed more food than it has been able to produce, and it has now finally caught up with us. In the U.S., commodities such as flour and rice are already being rationed, and the next rice crop won't be available for another 4 to 5 months. It's fall in the Southern Hemisphere, and many countries are short the food necessary to make it through the winter and have stopped exporting certain commodities altogether. Remember our trade deficit? Trillions of dollars have stacked up outside the country and are now rushing in to buy our food production at any price. By late summer, if not early fall, it is likely our government will step in and control food and food exports under martial law. Call Ready Reserve Foods at 1-800-453-2202, 1-800-453-2202, or visit us at www.readyreservefoods.com, 1-800-453-2202.
Well, Dr. Stan, back here at the Genesis Communication Network, our guest is William Grigg. We're talking about the history of this move towards consolidation of power. Of course, William is taking us back to the events that occurred at the time of the War of 1812. But you must understand, this is long-term planning, and I personally believe that there's a conscious and organized effort that has been here since the inception of America, that one day we would, of course, lose our freedom, and, of course, that the dictatorship would be imposed, but always justified the American people. So many of them are quite willing to give up their freedom in the name of being protected from the wicked Osama bin Laden and his terrorists who really want to take away our freedom. That's what it's all about. The terrorists want to take away our freedom. That's why we've got to give the government ever more power over our lives, and certainly so they can track our finances, so they can track the books we sign out, so they can track our health, so they can watch us at all times, whether it be satellites or even with our cell phones. With this slight modification, they can listen to everything you say, even if the cell phone is turned off. So go right ahead with this story there, William.
That is a very important overview of the type of uses to which this instrument we're describing can be put. The fact that people are still being told that this supposedly omnipotent troglodyte hunkering in a cave somewhere in Pakistan can somehow kill all of us, and that there's still a receptive audience for that in this country, that's a real problem here. There are other variations on this theme that we could see played in order to cultivate public acceptance of martial law, one of which, of course, would be in the event of severe dislocations in the food supply. We might have a situation here in many parts of the United States analogous to what we see once again in Pakistan, where the military is being used to guard flour shipments in order to maintain and enforce rationing policies that are handed down by the central government. Interestingly enough, if you go way back to the very founding of the country, James Madison, he's somebody for whom I have immense respect. He's the father of the Constitution. He's hailed universally as the chief architect of that document. When he was asked by George Mason, point blank, why is it that you're talking about the idea of giving control over the people's militias to the Congress, what Madison said by way of a reply was really quite telling. And I'm quoting now from Madison, if resistance should be made to the execution of the laws, it ought to be overcome. This could be done in only two ways, either by regular forces or by the people, meaning the people organized in militias. By one or the other, it must unquestionably be done. If insurrections should arise or invasions take place, the people ought unquestionably to be employed to suppress and repel them rather than a standing army. And, of course, the really key concession here is if resistance should be made to the execution of the laws. In other words, this is an assertion way back in the 1788 ratification debate in Virginia. This is June 14th, 1788, it was a Saturday, that they were discussing this element of the system. And way back then, James Madison is saying, well, we have to assert the primacy of the central government here. We have to have some mechanism whereby this central government can be made sovereign over the states. And that, of course, means that you can't really have a free union of states where the government is the servant of the states. What Madison was saying was already they're going to lay the predicate of making the states supreme and sovereign by giving the Congress the power to organize and to deploy the militias as what we now call a National Guard after the passage of this National Guard Act of 1903. And the thing, once again, about what's happened to the National Guard here beginning in 1903, is that it became an instrument of national policy as opposed to being an instrument that states could use to hold the central government in abeyance. And that, once again, is a principle that James Madison talked about. I believe in Federalist Paper number 45, he talked about the idea of militias being organized for the purpose of beating back the impositions of a lawless central government. And even in the ratifying convention in 1788, when he was asked about the possibility of the militias being used by the central government as their plaything, Madison said that he really couldn't conceive of a circumstance in which the central government, and I'm quoting now, would drag the militia unnecessarily to an immense distance. This, sir, would be unworthy of the most arbitrary despot. In other words, Madison was trying to say, well, this is something that could happen, but you have to believe that it would be done by a government that would be absolutely despotic. Only a despot would think of taking militias from, say, Massachusetts or Maine or California or Connecticut or someplace and sending them immense distances in order to enforce its whims. Well, that's exactly the situation we have right now, because since 1903, the National Guard has been used for practically every purpose under the sun, with the possible exception of actually protecting the states against the encroachments of the federal government. There were a few states during the civil rights contests and controversies of the 50s and 60s that occasionally would use the National Guard in order to beat back efforts at forcible integration of the schools. Of course, the most notorious example of that was when George Wallace tried to use the National Guard to prevent...
Hold that right there. We'll be back in just a moment.
for listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNlive.com today.
Attention, GCN listeners. Would you like to watch uncensored, unregulated, even banned TV on your computer? Well, now you can watch satellite TV on your PC with an extremely simple hookup that allows computer owners to pick up more channels than any sane person can even watch without paying monthly cable or satellite fees. Here's the story. New video feed technology lets anyone with a high-speed internet connection gain instant access to an endless list of underground channels from all over the globe. And here's the best part. It's 100% legal. And it works at home, the office, or even in other countries to grab television channels and video feeds at your command. GCN listeners can use it to watch hundreds of conspiracy videos absolutely free. Best of all, you could be watching free TV on your PC in 5 minutes or less. It's that simple. Just go to www.orderfreetv.com. That's www.orderfreetv.com. To watch unregulated TV on your PC, go to www.orderfreetv.com.
Are terrorist cells or prime terror targets located near you? Where are military bases and hazardous waste sites located? How do you find the best area for solar, average rainfalls, fish contamination advisories, and major transportation routes? In the new interactive CD book, Prudent Places USA, you will find the information you want with over 50 interactive parameters that you control. Find everything from housing prices and taxes to brewing environmental catastrophes. Locate billion-dollar disaster-prone areas, the safest cities, ideal solar locations, and much, much more. Complete with over 3 gigabytes of detailed information on each of the 3,000-plus counties in the U.S., including 550 high-resolution, full-color maps, and full-color photographs, as well as detailed information and analysis that you need. Get this hard-to-find information by ordering Prudent Places USA now for only $29 plus shipping and handling by calling New Millennium at 888-803-4438 or order on the web at BerkeyWater.com.
Warning! The EPA states indoor air pollution is the number one health problem today, causing 50% of all illnesses. Go to germfree33.com. Technology developed for NASA is now available to protect your family and health. Laboratory proven to eliminate 99.9% of deadly MRSA, black mold, E. coli, bird flu, and more from all surfaces. germfree33.com. Remove pollen, mold, pet dander, dust mites, and more from the air. Germfree33.com. World's best air purifiers. Nothing else compares. Germfree33.com. No expensive filters to replace. Covers 3,000 square feet. See the proof at germfree33.com. Order from our secure website. Credit cards accepted. Order by phone. 800-492-1073. Payment plans available. 800-492-1073. Germfree33.com. The world's best air purifiers.
Well, Dr. Stan back here at the Genesis Communication Network, and of course our guest this afternoon is William Grigg. And William, before we go on, I'd like you to tell our listeners how they can get your blog site, how they can get your book, Liberty in Eclipse.
Appreciate that. The easiest way to do both would be to go to the website, the homepage of the Welch Foundation, which is entitled The Right Source, and the web address for that is www.rightsourceonline.com. That's one word. RightSourceOnline.com. If you go there at the top of the page, there's a banner ad for my new book, Liberty in Eclipse, The War on Terror and the Rise of the Homeland Security State. You can click through there and order it directly from the website. You can go to Amazon.com as well and order it there. And it's also available by way of your fine service there, Dr. Stan. Radio Liberty carries Liberty in Eclipse. My blog is entitled Pro Libertate. That's a Latin phrase that means for freedom, and I try to update it with a new essay between 3 and 5 times a week, depending upon my schedule, the vagaries of my schedule. And it's accessible through the Right Source website as well. Just go to www.rightsourceonline.com and look at the left-hand side of the screen, and then scroll down about a third of the way down the page. You'll find my photograph, and then next to it there's a hot link that will take you to Pro Libertate. It's also available directly if you go to freedominourtime.blogspot.com. Freedom in Our Time is once again written as one word, freedominourtime.blogspot.com. And I try to update it, as I mentioned, between 3 and 5 times a week. And the reason why I write so sparingly, as opposed to a lot of other bloggers who will update their blog several times a day, is that I'm generally trying to write between a 1,200 and 2,000-word essay on a given subject on a given day. And that involves a lot of original research. I'm not merely commenting on what others have written. I'm trying to contribute something distinctive to the conversation. Recently, over the last two or three weeks, I've been writing a great deal, some might say obsessively, about what's been going on in Texas with the seizure of these hundreds of children and young adults from the FLDS community by the state Child Protective Services, which is, I think, an abuse of power in many ways cognate with the Waco massacre of 1993. And the only reason why we haven't seen people being gunned down or immolated on live television is probably because the FLDS community was, if anything, even more harmless than the Branch Davidians. The Branch Davidians, of course, came under a direct armed assault. And the FLDS did not, but the assets were in place to do so. And so I've written a great deal about that. And if you go to my blog, Pro Libertate, and look back over the last couple of weeks or so, you're probably going to find a lot of material that, while available in the public domain, is not really part of the managed conversation in the mainstream media right now. I'm astonished at how far behind the curve on this story most of the major outlets are. They just don't have a frame of reference for discussing it, because most of these people are taking a look at this as a story of an obscure and eccentric cult rather than a story of abusive power and the complete wholesale destruction of constitutional due process by rogue government agencies, which is what the story should be looked at. And so that's a good example of the sort of thing I try to accomplish with my blog, Pro Libertate.
Well, you do an excellent, excellent job of it. We always look forward to what you've had to write there. So you pick up the story. You're certainly talking about Madison as its ideas evolved. And of course, there seemed to be an increasing effort, even, you know, under Madison, to begin to centralize power in Washington, D.C., and discourage, you know, dissent by the states. Basically, that is the road to tyranny, and I'm surprised that James Madison would turn his back on his original beliefs back there when they were writing the Constitution, and begin to embrace this concept of all power in Washington, D.C., but power corrupts, and absolute power corrupts absolutely everyone. And that was what Mike Granville told me, and I believe he's right.
Yeah, if you're talking about the founders, of course, you're talking about men of uncommon insight and moral virtue, and James Madison has long been my favorite founder because he was so unremarkable as a personality, but he developed his mind so well, and he really more or less dominated the Constitutional Convention because he was the best prepared, and he'd studied the history of the subject of republics all the way back into the Tenebris Myths of Antiquity, and so he's somebody for whom I've had a great deal of respect, and I still have a great deal of respect for him, but from the crooked timber of humanity, no straight thing was ever made. I mean, we're all fallen, sinful men, and that's certainly true of our handiwork. And so the Constitution does reflect the fact that we're dealing here with men who were uncommon men, but men nonetheless. I mean, Madison made some very important mistakes, I think, in terms of calibrating the balance between the federal government, the central government, and the states. I think that it's important to recognize that John Adams, who was a wonderful man, very devout, passionate believer as a president, was a disaster. He was the one who enshrined in law the Alien and Sedition Acts that made it a crime, a felony, to criticize his administration. You know, Jefferson, I think the Louisiana Purchase was unconstitutional. Washington, during the war between the states, was urging the Continental Congress to enact conscription, which, of course, is a complete repudiation of the idea of individual liberty. So there are dark and light sections and portions of every personality. I believe that when you're talking about men like Washington and Jefferson and Madison and Adams and Hamilton, you're talking about men who were preponderantly made of light in the sense that not that they were specially illuminated beings or anything, but rather that they aspired to do that which was right and which was good and which was worthwhile, and that they did so, for the most part, I think miraculously. I really believe that it was a functioning of God's grace that we had statesmen of that caliber congregating along the eastern seaboard of what would become the United States way back in the late 18th century. But the specific issue here with respect to the creation of the National Guard and the eventual degeneration of the militias into a National Guard that would be an instrument of presidential tyranny really came to a head during the Civil Rights era, beginning in 1957, when Eisenhower nationalized the so-called National Guard in Little Rock, as a way of enforcing a desegregation decree by the court. That is a complete inversion of what the National Guard was supposed to be. I mean, when it was the state's militias, it was supposed to defend the states from the federal government. Whatever you think of the policy of government-imposed segregation, which I think was abhorrent and altogether unacceptable, the fact is the federal government did not have the constitutional authority to do what it did in Little Rock, nor did it have the authority to do what it did in Alabama in 1963, when John F. Kennedy and Robert Kennedy federalized the National Guard in order to enforce another desegregation decree. George Wallace, who of course is remembered for upholding the principle of segregation, when he was defending segregation, was actually defending a principle which was much nobler and much more commendable, and that was the principle of the reserve powers of the states. But because of the 1903 National Guard Act, the central government now had the means to use the National Guard as a tool against the interests of the states. And that's a very important development here on the path to martial law, because now you have the National Guard being used as part of a standing military establishment by the central government to carry out the edicts of the federal government, the central government in Washington, within the United States. That was not the purpose for having a militia, but that's something George Mason predicted way back in 1788 would come about. Another really important marker here was the use of the National Guard increasingly as an expeditionary force by the federal government. There's a terrific book out by Bill Kaufman called Ain't My America. It just came out a couple of weeks ago, and it's about the history of conservative opposition to wars of empire and militarism in general. And what Kaufman points out in responding to James Madison's blithe assurance that you would never have a situation where the state's militias would be used by the central government as an expeditionary force, Kaufman points out is that in the war in Iraq, George W. Bush, quote, has called well over half of the 400,000 members of the state National Guards, descendants of the militia, to active duty for the Iraq War. And when in the mid-1980s the governors of Minnesota and Massachusetts challenged the authority of Ronald Reagan's Department of Defense to send state National Guard units to Honduras, presumably to assist in the overthrow of the government of Nicaragua, the Supreme Court upheld the right of the central government to send guardsmen wherever it wishes, even over the objections of state governors. So much for federalism, so much for Madisonian guarantees. Now, in October 2006, as we pointed out, the Bush administration proposed and got signed into law this measure called the John Warner Defense Act, which would have made it possible for the President of the United States to override all the governors of all the states to take direct control of the National Guard and deploy them anywhere in the country the President would see fit in the event of an insurrection or in order to counteract what the language of that measure rather ominously called combinations of various sorts. Now, that, of course, was identified by a number of people, including Vermont Democrat Senator Patrick Leahy, as a martial law measure, because that would turn the National Guard into a Praetorian Guard, basically an instrument of the presidential will. And earlier this year, actually in December of last year, and I believe in January of this year, Patrick Leahy, working with a Republican senator from Missouri named Kit Bond, proposed a measure that would reverse that measure of the John Warner Defense Act. This was called the National Guard Empowerment Act, and it was actually signed in January of this year, very quietly, so quietly that very few people were aware that this had happened. And we were invited to believe that this essentially repealed the dangerous portions of the John Warner Defense Act. Well, it didn't. What it did was it created a different channel through which the president can take control of the National Guard by essentially cutting the institutional cords that bound the National Guard units to their states. And now the head of the National Guard is no longer a lieutenant general. He's to be a general. He's to have a status within the defense system akin to those of the heads of the other services. The National Guard is going to be folded more tightly into the Homeland Security Mechanism and also become part of Northern Command. Northern Command was created in 2002, basically, as a military command over the continental United States as well as over Mexico and Canada. And there are elements of Northern Command that seem to prefigure a unified military command over the NAFTA regions, or what would become the North American Union, under the assumptions which are governing certain covert policies being worked out by the executive branches of the governments of the United States, Canada, and Mexico. A Northern Command signed a codicil with Canada earlier this year to provide for the use of U.S. troops in Canada and the reciprocal use of Canadian troops in the United States in the event of an emergency. But the National Guard is now completely integrated into the system, and so it's lost any semblance of its former status as the state militias. And because the National Guard is going to be receiving all kinds of emoluments, it's going to be receiving all kinds of subsidies and material help from the Pentagon, the governors now are very happy that this has supposedly happened in such a way that reversed the Bush order, or the Bush era of the previous Bush enactment, the John Warner Act, because now they can claim to be controlling the National Guard units. They're going to be getting more money for them. Well, that's not quite true. What's happened is now the Pentagon is completely in charge of the National Guards, and it's now created a situation where the National Guards are part of this monolithic Northern Command that is the muscle for the Homeland Security state in the event of a national emergency, a natural catastrophe, a terrorist attack, or a staged terrorist attack. In the event of some kind of an exigency of that sort, Northern Command would basically be putting out the material and the manpower to enforce the decrees of the president through the Homeland Security apparatus. And so that more or less completes the journey of what had been the state militias way back in the colonial era and the era of the War for Independence. The journey of these state militias from being the armed people to defend the rights of the people against the central government into becoming now a fully liveried element of this monolithic military command and control apparatus that basically creates the framework for full-scale martial law here in the United States. And it's also important to recognize one other thing. The Bush administration is arguing in court right now in the case of an accused terrorist by the name of Ali Saleh Muhammad al-Mahri. He's somebody who was identified as a terrorist suspect and then designated an enemy combatant by presidential decree in June of 2003. He was sent to a military brig in South Carolina, and the Bush administration is arguing that the president has the authority as the commander-in-chief to use the military to arrest and detain indefinitely anybody living within the United States, whether you're talking about a citizen or a legal resident alien. Al-Mahri came here legally on a student visa with his wife and five children. He arrived on September 10, 2001. He was studying in Illinois for a master's degree in computer science, and on the basis of intelligence reports, he was identified as somebody who was a sleeper agent. He may or may not be, I don't know. The fact that they arrested him and detained him makes me think he was probably an innocent guy, because I'm cynical enough to believe that the U.S. government knows who the sleepers are and wants them to be deployed until they become useful. But Al-Mahri was taken into custody in 2002. In 2003, he was decreed an unlawful enemy combatant. Since that time, he's been in military custody. There was an appeal made to an appeals court, I believe the Fourth Circuit, that was heard last year. And about a year ago, the Fourth Circuit said, well, no, you can't do this unless you suspend habeas corpus, and there is an official declaration of martial law. And what the Bush administration said was, well, we'll suspend habeas corpus, which was done in 2006, October that year, with the Military Commissions Act. And as far as martial law is concerned, they never formally declared martial law. They don't disagree with the circuit court's decision or its analysis. They just believe that the president basically has the powers that would accrue to him in the event that we had a formal declaration of martial law.
And I think it's really it's so frightening, and there was no outcry from our
exactly
people in Congress. There's no outcry from other members of the United States Senate. There's no outcry from the media. And they know exactly what's going on. They just don't want the American people to understand that by incrementally we are losing our freedom, and I think you're absolutely right. We are certainly very, very soon will, of course, have martial law in America and suspend the right of habeas corpus, whether it'll be a military attack, whether it'll be an insurrection, whether it'll be an epidemic, whether it'll be famine. Who knows what it'll be? But I think that freedom will soon be lost in America. It will become simply a remembrance of things past.
I'm afraid you're right. we're definitely at the point now where it's a question of use it or lose it with respect to your freedoms. And one of the things that I suspect is going to happen very soon, and this is something I'd adverted to earlier, is the fact that under the pressure of increasing food scarcity and increasing economic dislocation, we're going to be finding in pockets throughout this country these little roiling pools of civic unrest and perhaps even ethnic fighting, ethnic violence, that will bring about a situation where we're going to have, or have, in mocking air quotes, say we're going to have to, we'll be told we'll have to have, a more overt and more paramilitary presence on the part of government in order to maintain order. We've already seen where, in the name of fighting the war on drugs, the military and police functions have become blended, and that's a process that's accelerated in the so-called war on terror. If heaven forbid we have little outbreaks of ethnic violence in this country, that's something that could accelerate even more.
Amen. So we're out of time. Our guest today has, of course, been William Grigg, and certainly you'll want to go to his website once again, rightsource.org. Is that right?
Rightsourceonline.com.
Rightsourceonline.com. Bye-bye. God bless. We'll talk to you tomorrow night.
Introducing the most efficient gravity filter available. You know, if you were to throw 100 ball bearings at a magnet, most would bounce off. But if you placed them on the magnet, all would stick. The same principle applies in water filtration. Most filtration systems force water through the filter at 60 to 90 PSI, causing water molecules to race through the filter in less than a second. The Berkey Light is different. Water molecules take 5 to 10 minutes to pass through the torturous path of the self-sterilizing filters. This allows the proprietary media formulation to remove and reduce pathogenic bacteria, cysts, chemicals, herbicides, pesticides, organic solvents, foul tastes, odors, heavy metals, and nitrates. It is so powerful it purifies raw, untreated water from remote lakes, streams, and stagnant ponds.
Get the Advanced Berkey Light Purifier for only $279 by calling New Millennium, 888-803-4438, or order on the web at berkeywater.com. Not yet available in Iowa.
Have you made preparations to look after yourself and your family in case there's a national emergency or a terrorist attack? Well, I want to tell you that the government's looking after their people. In fact, plans have been made to protect people of high-ranking position in government, but they're not making any preparations for the average individual, so you're going to have to look after yourself. If you'd like information on long-term food storage, if you'd like information on the other items you would need in case of a national emergency, why don't you give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927, and ask for the emergency food catalog. We'll get it right off to you, and we'll get the items shipped directly from Ready Reserve Foods. That's 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-544-8927. You're going to have to begin making preparations to look after yourself.
Imagine walking down the street and hearing footsteps behind you. They get closer and closer, and suddenly you have a sense something bad is going to happen. What are you going to do to defend yourself? TiboTech specializes in non-lethal self-defense products for you and your family, with everything from stun guns and tasers to personal alarms and pepper spray. TiboTech will arm you with the most advanced non-lethal products anywhere on the net. Not sure where to start? The TiboTech Essentials package is great for you or to share with your family. It comes with a 950,000-volt cell phone stun gun, a multi-pack of pepper sprays, an extremely loud personal alarm, and a how-to book for defending yourself with pepper spray, all at a low price. With these or any of TiboTech's products, you have the tools to defend yourself against an attack and get yourself to safety. Don't be a victim. Be a victor. Stock up now. TiboTech.com. That's TiboTech.com.
Well, I stand back here at the Genesis Communication Network, and certainly I always enjoy having William Grigg. I hope you would do as well. And certainly, if you'd like to get his book, Liberty and Eclipse, we carry it. That's Liberty and Eclipse. And it is an excellent, excellent book on this subject. We also have a talk that we've given. It's called The Planned Police State. Now, the talk is available on DVD. And there's a syllabus which we encourage you to get with that because it'll have all the documentation. That is the Planned Police State DVD and then the Planned Police State syllabus, and if you get the two of them together, you get a special discount. Then, of course, we want to talk about the concentration camps. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, there really are concentration camps. In fact, the Bush administration gave on a non-competitive bid contract $385 million to KBR, which is a Kellogg Brown and Root, a subdivision of the Halliburton Company, Dick Cheney's Halliburton Company. And, of course, $385 million to build concentration camps in America, to stand by, to be ready to build them. We don't know whether they're building them or not, but we know they already have all sorts of concentration camps. You certainly would want to get our DVD, Bob Wire of America. That's Bob Wire of America. You want to get our four-tape set on concentration camps. And, of course, you'll want to get the DVDs, Amazing Clips, because there you'll see the Iran-Contra hearings where Congressman Jack Brooks tries to bring out the fact that there's a plan, in case of a national emergency, to suspend the Constitution and round up American citizens. And you can get, of course, the Amazing Clips, you get the four-tape set, you get the DVD and other things in the Concentration Camp Special. And we pay the postage for that. Give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. You can get into the individual items, the concentration camp, four tape set, the Amazing Clips, Bob Wire of America DVD, or, of course, and then, of course, there's all sorts of reports that come with the concentration camp special. You need to get the information. You need to show it to others. You need to let people understand this is not imaginary. It's really very real. You see, you're only paranoid when you imagine people are out to get you. And there really are people here who want a dictatorship in America. They've always wanted a dictatorship, and they have been planning on it for a long time. And who are these people? Well, of course, that's why you need to get my talk on the Forbidden Secret, and this syllabus goes with that. And we actually give you some of the writings of these people. And the other side, they put out pamphlets for their people. They will tell you they have their people, you know, actually has infiltrated everything, everywhere. And, of course, you'll read their own documentation in the syllabus that goes along with the Forbidden Secret, also in my Planned Police State syllabus. You'll actually see some of their material. So understand, this is not imaginary. There is a very real threat. And our major weapon, and the thing they fear the most, is the fact that people are going to begin to wake up. So give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927, and get the various items we list. If you'd like to get a free catalog, we'd be glad to send it to you. If you haven't yet gotten your water filters, your Berkey water filters, why, you can call us. We'll be glad to send you the information, or you can order them right away and have extra filters online as well. And then, of course, we hope that many of you out there would want to get the dehydrated food that's put out by Ready Reserve. We work with them, and you can order them through us. They're no cheaper if you go directly to the manufacturer. You order them through us. You help Radio Liberty, and, of course, we'll work with you to get your order in. Let me tell you that they're having increasingly difficulty getting a lot of this food. We are going to see food shortages. It's only a matter of time. Are you prepared? Well, if you'd like the food catalog, you'd like to put your order in it, don't put it off. Our number, 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. And then please pray for America. Pray for revival, but pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection.
Are terrorist cells or prime terror targets located near you? Where are military bases and hazardous waste sites located? How do you find the best area for solar, average rainfalls, fish contamination advisories, and major transportation routes? In the new interactive CD book, Prudent Places USA, you will find the information you want with over 50 interactive parameters that you control. Find everything from housing prices and taxes to brewing environmental catastrophes. Locate billion-dollar disaster-prone areas, the safest cities, ideal solar locations, and much, much more. Complete with over 3 gigabytes of detailed information on each of the 3,000-plus counties in the U.S., including 550...